I'm Harlan, and this is my podcast. Welcome to another episode of Visual Learner. I have a lot of things I want to talk about today. First and foremost is that I got a haircut, if you can't tell. I got tired of constantly brushing it out of my face and choking on it while I was sleeping. It was trying to smother me every night, and I was just over it. So I had to do away with it. I just wanted a normal guy haircut, the normalest of normal guy haircuts, and I ended up with a little Superman curl in the front, which I think that's cool, isn't it? They went too short on the sides. I wanted a lower taper, but it'll grow out, whatever. So got a new haircut, and I'm back in the saddle, baby. It was an interesting week, as it always is. And the first thing I wanted to talk about was, I don't know if anybody has seen the Tiptoes folk singer that's been going viral on TikTok the last couple of days. I saw it yesterday and immediately was like, we have to talk about this. I have to look at this because I had a lot of thoughts about it. So I'm going to play the video, and then we'll get into it a little bit.
You'll be married in a year in the suburbs with a kid on the way in three. Convincing yourself you're living the American dream. And I'll be dancing on California.
Oh, what was that? Can't hear that, bud. Speak up.
Kid who got it all wrong. Convincing myself one day I'll write a love song.
So that video went viral. And one of the reasons why a lot of people have been making fun of this guy is, and why he's called the Tiptoes singer, is because at the very beginning of the video, which is the end of the song, he really belts it out. He gives it his all, and it causes him to lift up off the ground onto his tiptoes. He's literally standing 10 toes down on his art. And it's obviously going viral for the wrong reasons. Because it's cringe. It's that weird, it's stomp clap folk music adjacent. It's not full on stomp clap, but it's pretty close. And we all know how people feel about the stomp clap genre of music. It's cringe, and should only be featured in Ford F-150 commercials. So he's going viral for the wrong reasons. Somebody else was saying that they looked through, because there's five different angles or something crazy of this performance that I thought was taking place in a garage or like a somebody's driveway in the middle of the night. But that is not what's happening, because behind him, behind his shoulder, you can see there's like an exit sign, like one of those green exit signs in one of the other angles. But the ground is like concrete. And so I thought this was happening in somebody's driveway somewhere, which, like, look, there's nothing wrong with music, live music in weird places. I'm all for it. I think there should be more musicians doing small shows like this for, it's probably like his friends or people he knows. Regardless, I'm all for weird venue spaces. The thing that is bothering people about this is his vibrato, because it's not, I'm no musician. I don't know music theory or the rigorous training, like vocal training good musicians have to go through, but I can tell the difference between vibrato, how it's supposed to be done, and vibrato that's just shaking your head to make the sound. Like putting yourself in a paint shaker and then singing. That's what this sounds like. Which is the biggest complaint people are having with this guy, Brendan Abernathy. Because of course his last name is fucking Abernathy, the most fake made up stage name for a white guy ever. And of course, and he's playing a guitar. Of course, his name would be Abernathy playing a folk song. So somebody else that was looking at all the different angles went to one of the people's profiles, and it turns out they're like a marketing person, like a music marketing person, which has led a lot of people to believe this is staged. It was meant to go viral to like propel this single or his record or whatever it is, just his career in general, but it kind of backfired because it's embarrassing. Also, why you got shoes off? Put those toes away. And what are those socks? He's got, for just the audio people, he's got like these weird hiking socks that are multicolored and just, but put shoes on. Why are you barefoot in a, I don't know, maybe it is a garage. Maybe it's like backstage at a theater or something. I don't know. Put your fucking shoes on. This whole thing screams of like youth pastor vibes from like youth group. Youth pastor who like preys on underage girls. Yikes. it's not even a good song. Like the song itself, I can't figure out what the melody is. I can't figure out what the tempo is. It's just not good. It's a bad song. Like what? Hang on. I gotta replay it because what is the melody? Hang on.
You'll be married in a year in the suburbs with a kid on the way in three. Convincing yourself you're living the American dream.
You gotta love the little salute he does. I don't like this song. And I know art is subjective, right? Everybody has... There's some people that probably really like this song. I have been seeing people online reacting to this guy, being like, it's a bop. It's absolutely not a fucking bop. It's not. But the other thing that this reminded me of is like, well, before I get into that, there were a lot of people that were like saying, this is all Benson Boone's fault. And it's like, honestly, Benson Boone compared to this is, who's a good singer? Madonna, Cher, Adele. Like Benson, do not compare this guy to Benson Boone. That is rude. And it's also the song, the way he's singing it doesn't make sense for the song. I saw another person who did a cover of it who basically was like, this, the reason this song is so bad is because it's supposed to be a country song. So here's this cover I just want to share with everybody.
Here's the problem with that suburbs song. It's actually a country song. Here's Eric Church singing it. You'll be married in a year in the suburbs with a kid on the way in three. Luke Bryan. Convincing yourself you're living the American dream. Chris Stapleton. Well, he down out of California. Kid who got it all wrong. Told you. Maybe one day I'll sing and write a love song. It's a country song. That's the problem.
Yeah, so it's a country song. He's doing it wrong, and he's not on any sort of time. The original. It's infuriating. So, I don't believe that this is a problem. This is a direct... there's a correlation between Benson Boone and Brendan Abernathy. At all. They're two different things. Because this song, this Brendan Abernathy guy, the way he's singing is very 2000s folk revival mixed with like some emo. There was a weird era in the early 2000s where folk and emo kind of came together in a horrible bastard child was born. I saw some people talking about how like, oh, this is just like Bright Eyes, like Conor Oberst. Or, I mean, the argument could probably even be made that it's like an acoustic version of like a Modest Mouse song. That guy sang weird, right? They both did. Conor Oberst also had a creepy little ghost voice. I don't even know how else to describe the way Bright Eyes sounded, but it's a weird intersection that's like a throwback to when I was first going to shows and I was a teenager going to, you know, like the teen center to see my friends do like an acoustic sit down set. And there was, this is triggering for me, guys, because there was a very specific person from my hometown who was the embodiment of this Brendan Abernathy guy. Like, tip to toe, tip to literal toes, there was an artist, a singer, I'm not going to say his name, who sang shit like this and was just as passionate about just going, being so over the top. And he had a similar like youth pastor vibe about him where it felt like the spirit of the music was like compelling him to play his guitar like that. And I remember even then feeling like, this is a little much, guy. Like, dial it back a little bit. We don't need all that. And he did the same vibrato thing. He did kind of more the singing and cursive thing, like the, like that, that sort of vocalization. And he was kind of, a lot of people made fun of him. He was a good musician though. He knew how to play his instruments and he knew how to write a catchy song, where this guy, I don't think these songs are catchy at all. I don't even think they're good enough to be in an F-150 commercial. But when I saw this, it was the first thing I thought was like, that's that guy from my childhood who did that. And it was just triggering. You know what I mean? I just can't, the throwing your guitar around and like the twitchy like physicality is what's so embarrassing. Because there were a lot of other good like acoustic musicians around that same time that I was going to shows. And like there was like the quintessential, like the opposite of the person I'm talking about, that's this Brendan Abernathy guy doing all this stuff over the top, like the foot stomp and knee jerking sort of thing. There was another artist who was better than that person that I knew, whose songs were very quiet and mellow, but they were strong enough to exist on by themselves without any of the over-the-top performance to like sell you that you should be feeling something while I'm singing this song. And I'm showing that to you by having a convulsion on stage. It just feels really manipulative. It's like when in a movie where there's like a really intense scene or like a, in a romance or a drama, and the writing isn't good enough or the acting isn't good enough for the audience to feel what they're supposed to feel, quote unquote. So they put a soundtrack, they put score music under it, like intense or sad, swelling music, to trick you into being like, that was emotional, when it wasn't. It wasn't. And even the writing, you'll be married in a year in the suburbs, convincing yourself you're living the American dream. What are these? Who? What? Ugh. It's just so surface level. Any song also that references like the American dream by name is a bad song. I don't know why. Anytime I hear certain words in songs, like, you're just like, there's probably a more poetic way to write that, right? And make that reference. Like, a lot of, especially folk music, a lot of it can be, sure, very, like, pointed and specific and on the nose. Like, Bob Dylan did that a whole lot. But if you're not as prolific as someone like that, and you're not also writing more sort of poetic interpretive music as well as singing about getting married in the suburbs and the American dream, it feels trite, I guess. It lacks any sort of, I don't know, I guess poetry to it. And like, I don't fuck with poetry. Poetry is pretentious and annoying, but I respect and appreciate the beauty of painting with words. Now who's the pretentious one? So Tiptoes Guys is going viral, and it reminded me of my teenage years going to teen center, you know, venues, going to like taquerias and like fucking like pizza place parking lots for shows, weird places for shows. And speaking of that, this is going to be a musical episode, because the other thing that was going viral that I saw was the All-American Rejects are doing all these house shows, performing in people's backyards for like hundreds, sometimes over 1,000 people in like these small little towns. And that's what we need more of. This is what needs to come back into the music scene. Not stomp, clap, folk, emo, socklet, or shoeless hobo guy playing bad songs. Playing shows in small non-venues. Because the All-American Rejects are crushing it. They've been touring the country as kind of a fuck you to Ticketmaster. Doing it like this DIY kind of shit where they just post... I don't even know how they're doing it. They're posting like like RSVPs online for people in the town to like buy a ticket. I don't even know how the ticketing works. I know they played in a bowling alley in one of their videos, so they can't be charging more than like a couple of bucks, because a lot of the crowds are like young folks going to these random places in the Midwest. And it's incredible. It's another instance where I was like, I've been to that show. I've been to that bowling alley show when I was a teenager. And it's really cool. And it's also a good way to, you know, I think they're in the studio, like recording another record, because I've been kind of paying attention to some of the videos they're posting. And I know they had a couple days off and they were in the studio. So it could be that they decided to do this instead of like what is now the traditional world tour. We're coming to the AT&T Superdome sponsored by Frito-Lay. Like they're doing your house. Hey, we're coming to your fucking house, so be ready. We're sleeping on your floor. Get the sleeping bags ready. And it's really cool, because that's also how I experience shows at a young age. Obviously it's creating a viral moment, but like that's the kind of virality that you want as a performer or anybody on the internet. You want people to be like, hey, that's sick. That's cool. I want to go to that. As opposed to a staged, not to get hung up on the Brendan Abernathy video again, but the more I look at this screenshot that's on my computer, he's just encircled in a dark room by a couple dozen people, it looks like, at least. And like a third of them all have their phones out with the flash on as if they're recording him. I don't think they're actually all recording him. But it looks like a horror movie. It looks like this guy has to perform for all of these people, or else they're going to tear him to pieces, like the ending of Perfume sort of style. If the tribunal is not pleased, we will eat Brendan Abernathy's bones. Perform for us, Brendan Abernathy, while we film the performance to be skewered online. See how you do under pressure, Brandon Abernathy, and your stupid song about getting married in the suburbs. So, what was I saying? The All-American Rejects are doing a good, cool, viral moment because it's not like they just went to one person's house and were like, fucking, we're viral now. Check us out. They're on a full tour. Like, if the Brendan guy was, if there were like a bunch of videos of this guy doing this type of, I don't know, circle pit. It's not a circle. I mean, it is a pit with a, and it is a circle. If he was doing like, this was his thing, I'm going to go to a random place, have a bunch of people stand around me and play a show for them in that way. And there were like a bunch of them. Like, I don't know, maybe that would make more sense than just this one-off weird video. But the All-American Rejects thing is cool because it's engaging, right? It's interactive. And it creates community, which is something we're all dying to have more of. We desperately need more community-oriented events in spaces for especially young people. And honestly, the fact that it's like pop punk that I grew up on, I'm obviously relatively biased because that's my shit. I grew up on that. That's my community. So it's awesome that there are younger people going to these house shows like I did 20 years ago. Fuck. I'm going to die. We're dying. I'm going to die soon. Man, looking back on your life and what you were doing 20 years ago, really puts a lot of things in perspective. And I feel conflicted about it. So there's a lot of these videos from these shows that I wanted to look. I don't want to look at a lot of the videos, but there's one specific one where there's like one of these little kids. I can't play the song on YouTube because I'll get copyright strike struck. But there's like a kid, a teenager. I was probably his age when I first heard the All-American Reject songs. That's sick, dude. That's awesome. And there's so many people at these shows singing along. And so I think with the resurgence of, I mean, even with the resurgence of, you know, stuff like the emo folk thing, I think Gen Z, at least, they're going to be fine as long as they find their emo pop punk brethren. And as long as like up and coming, you know, emo pop punk kind of bands continue to take a note from All-American Rejects. Go play your local pizza place. Go play a Long John Silver's. Are those even around anymore? Is Long John Silver's a thing? But I think it's great. It's incredible. There's some positivity in the world that's happening. And I think that we need more of it. You know, I will say, not enough love gets given, offered. There's not enough love for Newfound Glory in this new sort of pop punk revival era that we find ourselves in. And everybody needs to go listen to Coming Home. Perfect record, tip to toe. And because they're not, a lot of these pop punk bands and even new ones, they might not know it, exist because of Newfound Glory. So just a little shout out to go listen to Newfound Glory, I guess. In the middle of this. Let's see. So there was another thing I wanted to like kind of, I guess, react to. This is less fun. It's more frustrating than anything else. We're chugging right along. We're already 25 minutes in because I have a lot of thoughts on this next thing. So I saw Theo Vaughn. Oh, Theo. What's going on with Theo Von? A confusing little freak. I can never pinpoint what his deal is, man. A friend of mine introduced me to Theo Von many, many years ago, and I didn't really get it then. He showed me a clip of, he did like a set where he had eaten a bunch of mushrooms, I think. And so he was high while trying to do the set. And I was like, fucking, I don't want to watch this. This is embarrassing. And then, you know, I didn't really pay too much attention to him. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's Theo Von. And he's had, the thing with Theo Von is, I don't know how much of the Theo Von we see online and in his stand-up is an act and how much of it is genuinely who Theo Von is, right? The stories he tells sometimes are insane, if true, but they're so out there that they feel as though it's a bit. Not Andy Kaufman level bit, but it feels like a persona he's putting on. And he oftentimes sort of feigns ignorance and comes across as if he doesn't know better, or as if he's like this, you know, apolitical kind of comedian who says somewhat problematic things behind the guise of, but I'm a hillbilly or redneck or whatever, technically, because I think he's from New Orleans. Whatever the hillbilly version of somebody from New Orleans is. But it's always behind that. There's always this like buffer of him saying sometimes problematic or weird shit, and sort of using the excuse of like, but I don't know, I'm just a dummy. And like, to a certain extent, that is a decent defense. Like, you shouldn't listen to me, for example, because I'm an idiot. You should, anything I say, you should be going and Googling potentially. But I don't think I overuse that as an excuse. And I don't think I say problematic things. I mean, I have. And I might again, because I am a white man. Who has not lived through much hardship, if I'm being honest. So like that, it works up to an extent, but like it's so much a part of his brand that it feels tired and lazy and no longer a defense. So I wanted to talk about a specific clip that he posted himself from an episode of his podcast. This was like a week ago. So we're just going to watch some of this. I'm going to pause it because I took notes about some of the stuff that he says in this. And I just want to go over it because it's about Israel and Gaza. So, yeah, here we go.
You know, I wanted to say something. There's been something that's just been kind of on my heart, and so I feel like I should bring it up. There is... You know, we've had people on the podcast in the past to talk about it. And there's just there's a conflict that's been happening in the Middle East. People know about it, between Israel and Palestine and some of the areas over there, the Gaza area they talk about. And I just think it feels to me, I don't know it feels to me like it's a genocide that's happening while we're...
Okay, so you see what I'm talking about? He talks about how he's had people on his show who have talked about it, and then it starts as, there's something going on, there's a conflict going on in the Middle East. I think they call it Gaza or something. Like, that is so infuriating to hear from somebody with a platform like he does. Now, am I expecting him to be extremely versed in geopolitics? No. But bro, you interviewed people that have told you what the fuck is going on. You can't play like feign this ignorance and speak out of both sides of your mouth like he is. It's frustrating, to say the least. I think at one point he says he uses the word geologist instead of geographer. Or did I already?
And I just think it feels to me like it's a genocide that's happening while we're alive here in front of our lives. Sometimes I feel like I should say something. I'm not a geologist or geographer or anything like that, you know?
Brother, I know there's flubs that people make, but getting confused between geologist and geographer is fucking wild. And like, I also get to, I'm trying my best to like look at this as objectively as possible, because it is a good thing that somebody for so long who has distanced themselves to a certain degree from offering an opinion or an insight into things that are way above his head. I'll give him that, right? To speak on it, it is hard. I mean, it's hard for anybody, even if you do know what's going on. Like, to come to terms with a real-time genocide is hard to process. And this is a relatively new experience for anybody that's under the age of, like, what, 40? I'm 38. I've never been this aware of a genocide that's happening. What am I supposed to do? I don't want it to happen. What? You know what I mean? It's a hard thing to process, and I get that it can be scary to speak out for a lot of people because they might not know fully, or they might feel like they don't know what's going on. But I think that when the word genocide comes up, and like war in the Middle East, those phrases and words can feel like they're more complicated than they actually are. Like, this is not as complicated of an issue as I think some people would prefer to believe, because it ends up sounding a lot like, you know, propaganda. Like, you don't understand. You're not Jewish or you're not Palestinian. Shut the fuck up. If nobody commented on any of this stuff, we would be worse for it, right? Like, there needs to be discourse, but I digress. I don't think he's an idiot, because he has said insightful things in the past, and he seems like a very curious person. I mean, he's had Donald Trump on his podcast. He's had Bernie Sanders on his podcast. He's had like garbage men and like blue collar workers on his podcast. You don't invite those people onto your podcast if you're not curious and interested about the world around you, which is why this feels so tone deaf in some regards. Like, you know, he says he feels like more isn't said about it. I don't think I've played that part yet, but like, you can say more about it, dude. Let me play more of this.
That, you know, so I don't know a lot of some of it I do know, though. Like, I know the basics of the issues over there, but for me, it's just like how I feel like you see all these photos of people, just children, women, people, body parts, just people like putting their kids back together. And I just can't believe that we're watching that and that more isn't said about it. And so I'm not saying anyone else needs to say anything, but I think I'm just that more isn't said about it by me.
Right. So plenty of people are speaking about this is also the thing here, right? You've siloed yourself and latched onto a certain group of folks who have chosen to ignore it. Right? You pal around with some of the fucking perpetrators of the genocide itself. And I'd also like to know, you know, like, why? Why aren't you saying more about it? you know, what could possibly be the reason? Perhaps it's that you've cultivated this, you know, centrist to right wing fan base and audience. You know, and you've leaned into this Southern redneck aesthetic. Maybe that's why you haven't spoken up more about it. I don't know. The whole thing is just really weird and just confuses me more about what is Theo Von's fucking deal, man? Like, what is his deal? Because he goes on to say, like, you know, he feels, well, just play it. Hang on. Let's just keep going.
So I just, I want to be able to speak up about that, that I think we're watching probably, like, you know, one of the sickest things that's ever happened. And I'm sorry if I've kind of haven't said about it. I've tried to talk about it and learn about it. But I don't know. Maybe I just want to. I just wanted to say something. I don't even know what to do. You know, and it's crazy because our country's also complicit in it. You know, it's in it and has been for a long time. And it's just kind of interesting because then you just realize, oh, well, I'm just I'm a member of this country, but I'm just what we want sometimes doesn't matter, you know, and you just have to be a member of a place and your government is making other choices. So I don't know if I said that correctly, or I don't even know exactly what I said, but I just
and like that last bit about, like, I don't even know what I said, dude. Like, you can't hold me accountable. Don't even know what I'm saying. I'm out of my fucking mind. Like, the backpedaling and the, like, self-censoring is just frustrating. It's frustrating because I get what he's saying. Like, yes, it's good that you realize that we are complicit, especially the government as a whole, not individual people, although some individual people are complicit and directly the cause of what's going on over there. But when you're talking about the state, right, the government is complicit, and it is a helpless feeling. But this is, you know, an awful long time to come to that realization as a citizen with an internet connection. Like, not everybody needs to be fully aware of every issue. I'm not saying that either. But he's got all the time in the world between a weekly podcast and doing some stand-up sets to learn about this stuff and educate himself and talk to people. I mean, you already invite another person on. Invited genocide scholar on. You have the ability to actively educate yourself. And it's weird to make a heartfelt, it's not an apology, but like this heartfelt, I don't know, plea or statement about it. And it's great that I know that, you know, he feels empathy and he can feel sad about just the destruction that's been caused, but it just feels like it's a little too late, or it's too little too late, you know? And also too, again, another pro on this pro-con list is I'm sure there are people who are fans of his who also might not be paying attention and will see Theo Von and stop and think about it and maybe educate themselves rather than treat it as something that's happening thousands of miles away, right? Like, I see the benefit in having a platform and speaking, you know, fucking truth to power and addressing horrific war crimes especially to an audience whose priorities are probably like working for the weekend and getting drunk and, you know, going bass fish or like, what is it called when you put your hand down a catfish? What's that called? There's a term for that. Catfish technique. This is what a wild tangent to go on after talking about fucking Gaza. It's called, there's a name for it. It's what the hand, fishing fist technique. What's it called? Noodling. Noodling. Like the people. Okay, back on track, everybody. I figured out what noodling was called. There is a benefit for Theo Von, whose audience's priorities are working for the weekend and going noodling, you know, for some catfish. Who are probably, a lot of them, you know, people who don't live in major cities and aren't seeing protests or you know, full or surrounded by people who are apolitical or, you know, fucking right-wing lunatics who think there's nothing wrong with having a rapist in as the president. So it's incremental, but I think it's still like, it's good, but I can still be frustrated with it too, right? Like, because Theo Von is just such a strange, he's just such an oddity to me. Like at the end of the day, he's a little freak. Also, there's like a photo of him palling around with like the whole Trump family in Mar-a-Lago. So it's like, bro, pick a fucking side at this point, man. What are we doing? I mean, it is a sign that I think people, this and, you know, it's a sign that the tide is kind of turning, I think, for a lot of people in regard to calling it what it is, calling it a genocide, calling it an ethnostate, and I mean, we've been calling it an apartheid state, but like calling it like an ethnic cleansing, you know, Theo Von saying it and making this statement, but there also Piers fucking Morgan had Mehdi Hasan on his fucking show, which is usually a total nightmare. And he had him on a show and he said this.
I think we've reached common ground about what we view is happening and has been happening through this period of this blockade, which frankly is just starvation of the people there, including so many innocent young women and children. And I think that the incessant bombing and killing, and we don't know how many civilians have been killed, but it is on a daily basis, it looks like hundreds of people every day, with no apparent attempt, it seems to me, to have any real plan for how this ends or what happens when it ends, other than if you look at what Smotrich has been saying, probably the most right-wing member of a very right-wing government, he is talking in a genocidal language about kicking all the Palestinians out. So I think you and I have reached a place in the last few weeks where we are in agreement. But my question for you, Mehdi, is, how does this end?
I don't know the answer to that question, Piers, and I'm glad we're in agreement. I wish we weren't. Actually, I wish I had been wrong and you were right. I wish that a year ago when I said on your show, you said, well, if it's not about the hostages, what's it about? And I said, it's about depopulating Gaza. It's about conquering Gaza. I wish I'd been wrong. But as you said, Bezalel Smotrich, the finance minister in the Israeli government, said this week, we are there to conquer, cleanse, and remain.
When Piers Morgan is agreeing with you finally that it's a genocide, you know some shit is going down. And yeah, broken clock. Still right twice a day. But I think that it speaks to a larger shift in, you know, mainstream sentiment about Israel and Gaza. So yeah, those were the two, the one of the bigger things I wanted to talk about. Fucking getting political again. I just can't help myself. So I think at this point, because we are 40 something minutes in, I think I want to look at some of these queries that you all sent in. Let's see. So, okay, here's some advice. Or a question about some advice. Somebody asked for advice. Someone asking for advice. You post a lot of really great photography. Thank you so much. Do you have any advice for taking better pictures if the only camera I have access to is my phone? It's a Pixel. I would say don't worry about the equipment I think a lot of people get hung up on the equipment. Most, even the worst, most dog shit camera you could find, you can still take decent photos of if you have an understanding of composition, essentially. I would look up some basic composition techniques and get familiar with how to frame an image, what makes an image good and interesting. I'm sure there are countless resources to to find that. But I would also say, if you can afford it, go to, like, you know, maybe, like, if you have a local camera store or something, find a cheap old, like, 35 millimeter camera, like SLR with a lens, because having an understanding of how a camera functions is also just incredibly helpful in terms of, you know, because if you understand the device, what is happening, I think it helps you become a better photographer as well. I got my mom's, like, hand-me-down old, like, 60s Mamiya C-Core with a 50 millimeter lens, and I used that. That was my first camera ever, and some of my most favorite photos that I've ever taken were from that camera. So if you can find somebody that, you know, maybe they have an old one that they don't use anymore, it's a good beginner camera, get an old film camera. I know the film is, like, can be expensive, but I think it's just so, the experience of working with, you know, a manual camera is, what's the word I'm trying to think of? Helpful? That seems... It's not right, but it is helpful. Valuable. It's valuable. So that's what I would say. Let's do another one. This is some romantic advice, dating advice, kind of. This is fun. This is different. This person says they like to remain anonymous, and they ask, I got into my research project at my university, and I think I fell in love with my research partner. For context on the dynamic, we're both bi and non-binary. I think they reciprocate the feelings, but they have also told me that they have commitment issues and have rejected people they liked back. Any advice would help. I mean, you just gotta respect that. You know, I don't know how close you are with this person. What was the research project on? Is there something there? Were you researching, you know, is there an opportunity to work on this research project together that could lead to some sparks? You know what I mean? Like, is this like for some sort of anatomy class? Because you could always play doctor. math, unfortunately, if it's something math or engineering, historically not a very sexy, intimate subject. But I mean, if you think they reciprocate the feelings, then I mean, have you had a conversation about this? How much longer do you have in university where you're forced to be around this person? I would say continue to, I don't know, build rapport with them. If I'm being actually completely serious, continue to build rapport, become friends, and don't let whatever romantic sort of feelings you might have get in the way. I know that's really hard to do, but you gotta just shove it down. Don't act on it. Don't say anything stupid. Well, not stupid, but anything that, you know, they could respond negatively to. I would say continue building the rapport. And then once your school is over and you're not forced to, you know, be their research partner for a grade, then I would say broach the subject. But I would also say, I mean, I don't want to assume anything, but, like, rushing into this or letting your feelings, sort of muddle, the current relationship you have with this person, don't let that, like, get in the way. or become overwhelming, because I've been in those situations where you feel like you can't, I gotta say something. You never want to love bomb anybody, because they will run, they will flee, and you will never be able to fix that relationship. In a lot of instances, at least. Maybe, I don't know, if they're super chill and they get it and they find it endearing or charming or something, that's a different thing. You got to judge that on your own. I don't know this person. But enjoy the time that you have now. Like, it's this is easy. Being friends with somebody, and again, like, being forced to go to school and work on something with them, that's great. You're scheduled, baby. you don't have to worry about, you know, trying to make plans or trying to create a scenario that is conducive to like a romantic or even just like hanging out. Scheduling stuff with friends is a fucking nightmare. So right now, you both have to go to school. You both have to do this project. You both seem like you like each other. Just enjoy what you have now and don't take that for granted. And think that, like, oh, if we were together or whatever, this would be so much better. It would be a lot harder. I would just say, like, chill. Have the experience that you have now with them. And then figure it out once you turn in your, I don't know, your anatomy project or whatever the fuck. But if something does happen, hey, man, just wear protection. Let's do, how much time do I have? A couple more minutes. Someone asks, masculinity in 2025, what do you recognize as healthy masculinity? And what is your opinion on how should us men help make the world a better place? Healthy masculinity is, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all thing, in my opinion. It's a lot of things. It's very subjective. To me, you know, there's a lot of the labels of like strong, which like, sure, but it doesn't have to be that. It can be confident. It can be self-assured. It can be, you know, willing to make an ass of yourself online for any lunatic to comment and call you a soy boy. I think in that specific instance, it's about like, you know, because I've been actually thinking about doing a video on all of the like restricted held comments on some of my videos and the majority of them are calling me a soy boy, you know, cuck. But, you know, I don't respond to those. That's another version of masculinity, is like being talked to in a way that's not great, but like, it doesn't make me feel like less of a man or feel bad about myself, because I know it's just words and I'm also 30 fucking 8. There's nothing you can say to me that's going to hurt my feelings. If anything, you're the non-masculine person by getting in someone's comments and calling them a fucking cuck. Like, what, you loser? That's the least masculine thing somebody could possibly do, in my opinion. So there's not much. I mean, I feel secure at this point in my life, in my masculinity. Would I like to be more jacked? Yeah, of course. But all the stereotypical things about masculinity, I don't really find to be all that masculine. Like, they're just very performative and silly. Specific, like, you know, there's like YouTubers and people that I follow online that I find to be like a good, healthy, masculine energy. Like, I was just watching the Sad Boys podcast, and I think that Jarvis is an example of that. Eddie Burback is another one. Like, I think that all those guys, like, they're soft. I mean, their fucking podcast is called Sad Boys. So, but like, I think that there's a similar, you know, mindset there. You know, I mean, I've talked about like Hassan on here. I think he's like the more like traditionally masculine version of healthy masculinity. I mean, if for no other reason than for the fact that he works out, you know what I mean? Like, Because I agree with him on pretty much all his other stuff. But I think that it's a lot of stuff. It's really hard to say, what do I recognize as healthy masculinity in 2025? I think it's the same. I don't think that it's necessarily like... There's stuff every year that is healthy masculinity. It's basically like anything that is not disparaging or punching down or taking up space where it shouldn't, speaking over people, not actively listening, not making everything about you, sort of stopping and having a moment and thinking about just stuff before immediately saying what you think, you know, and then also like the things of like being active. I think like dressing well, having a sense of style and fashion, appreciating art all the way from, you know, fucking custom paint jobs on hot rods to like interior design, like having a passion for something, I think is healthy masculinity, as long as it's not hurting anybody, right? So that's what I would say. What do we do to make the world a better place? Do all those things, you know, like stay humble, King. If somebody calls you out and you do something wrong, like, oops, why? You know, learn, do better, be better. Fucking Google's right there. If you're confused about something and why somebody might be calling you out for a behavior or something you said, fucking look up and be like, oh shit, you know, have a fucking realization. That's man. That's how we be better. That's how men be better. I am kind of tired of the whole thing of like, I don't know how much this relates to this. I am kind of over the whole joke of like, take all podcast mics away from white men. Like, not only because I have a microphone right now and I am participating in that joke, but like, I think it's an opportunity for stuff like for me to participate in like these questions and things like that. Like if people have criticisms and they submit these, like I'll look at them and I will try to do better. So I think, you know, as much as it is not about like making everything about you or holding fucking taking up space where there could be other people, I don't. What? No battery remains. Well, I don't know what the thought I was just having was because my camera battery died. So, oopsie. Anyway, I think on that note, I was talking too much, taking up too much space, talking about how to be a better man. So I'm going to end the episode here. I think we're at an hour or whatever. Yeah, we're over an hour. So we're going to wrap this up. Thank you so much for sticking around and watching and listening to me ramble about a couple of things for as long as you did. I appreciate everybody who is subscribing and downloading the podcast episodes. You know, it is available for just audio only. I try and do my best to make sure that there's not a bunch of like visual references and stuff. So you can go, you know, go download some of the episodes and subscribe to my YouTube channel. Go follow me on Instagram, where I post updates about the podcast and my YouTube channel. I'm also thinking about starting a Patreon at some point. Just cause. I don't know that I'd be able to make any extra content just yet, but if all of a sudden I have to, if I decide, because I'm really fucking over having a day job, and I'm getting close to just fucking quitting and starting a Patreon and relying on content creation, even though, you know, it's not exactly how I would plan to do it. I would like to be, but I just, bro, day jobs are a fucking nightmare. And I'm realizing I don't think I was built to have them, to do them. Anyway, insane way to end this episode. Until next time, I We'll see you then.